wanted to talk a little bit about some of the video picks that I offer every Friday, both on radio, on Bob Surratt Show, and on television. I offer my home video picks that include movies like Scoob, which is a Scooby-Doo remake for the kids that is available online this week. Disney Plus has a new show called It's a Dog's Life, in which Bill Farmer, who is the actual voice of Goofy and Pluto for all the Disney movies for more than 30 years, goes around the country and tells you amazing stories about dogs doing the most amazing and heartwarming things. It's on Disney Plus. You could see that. There's a new comedy that's out this week that's called The Wrong Missy that stars David Spade and Evanston's own Lauren Lapkus, who you may know from Orange is the New Black, but also a movie that is about one of the most infamous Chicagoans of all time. I defy somebody to go anywhere around the world, and when they hear that you're from Chicago, that somebody doesn't bring up Al Capone. I've had that happen in multiple countries, where these are the names that come up when people hear you're from Chicago in another country. Al Capone is still number one after all these years. Michael Jordan comes up number two, and every once in a while, somebody mentions Oprah Winfrey. But Capone, there is a mystique about Al Capone that lives today, and he is the subject of a new movie. Sorry to say, not a great movie about Al Capone that stars Tom Hardy, that's on Amazon Prime Video. Jonathan Eig is an author who has written lots of different books, but one of them is called Get Capone, The Secret Plot That Captured America's Most Wanted Gangster. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
So what do you think it is about the Capone mystique that after all these years still makes him one of the most fascinating subjects for movies and books and television shows?
I think it's a couple of things. I think, first of all, it's the fact that he broke the law and did so openly, brazenly, mocked the law enforcement officers, said, come after me if you want. I don't care. I'm doing nothing wrong. And that idea of committing crime and getting away with it, even if it's only for a while, I think that that appeals to all of us in some really deep way. And the other thing is that Capone had real personality. You know, we think of these thugs as being, these brooding monsters. He was actually a gregarious guy. People enjoyed his company, and the reporters just couldn't get enough of him. So he really created his own myth very, very early on, very quickly. He was a genius for public relations.
Yeah, people really loved him, didn't they? I mean, I've heard interview after interview with people who were alive then, obviously, and, talk about how he would provide food. He was sort of the Robin Hood of out in the Cicero area, in the areas in which he traveled, that the average guy loved him. Is that true?
It is true. You have to put it in context, though. First of all, Prohibition was very unpopular. So Capone comes along and says, I'm going to keep giving you the booze that you want. And everybody's breaking the law, so he doesn't really seem like that bad of a lawbreaker. And then the Great Depression hits, and the government is really screwing up. The country's in tatters. And here's Capone, who seems more compassionate than the President of the United States. Capone, at least, is opening a soup kitchen and trying to, and maybe it was for PR, but nevertheless, he's showing some compassion at a time when Herbert Hoover wasn't. So all of that really helped Capone charm the public in a way.
Yeah, maybe some parallels to the times that we're living in now, where things are the world is in upheaval now, like it was during the Great Depression. So this movie, Jonathan had asked me, do I need to see this new Capone movie first? And I basically said I wouldn't wish that on anyone because it's really not that good of a film. And Tom Hardy makes some very interesting choices in portraying Capone. And really why I wanted to talk to Jonathan about this, because I don't know anything more than About Capone than I learned from Robert De Niro in the Untouchables movie, or in the old all the old gangster movies that I would see. And Tom Hardy plays him over the top, kind of cartoonish, talks where he's like sort of losing his mind, and the question that's sort of posed but not directly in this movie was he geniusly pretending to have lost his mind, or was he really suffering from some sort of dementia-like illness and his ultimate demise? Can you talk us through who Capone was back in those days? I mean, did he portray himself as someone who was losing his faculties?
Well, first of all, it's not a surprise to hear that Tom Hardy played it over the top. De Niro played it over the top too. And if Hardy went even more over the top, then we're in trouble.
Exactly.
But people love to take liberties with this story, and they've been doing it ever since, Robert Stack in the Untouchables TV series. It's fun. It's fun to make up stories around the guy because he's such a big character. He did suffer from dementia. He did suffer from tertiary syphilis, which was diagnosed after he went to prison. Some people speculate that he may have been showing some signs of dementia even before he went to prison, and maybe that's why he did such a bad job in defending himself in court. But the symptoms were not diagnosed, and they didn't really become bad until he was in prison. And you can see in the letters that he was writing from prison, which I found in the National Archives, that he was not completely lost. He not completely lost his mind, but by the time he got out of prison, 1940s, then he was really starting to lose it, and people said that he was really incapable of having a conversation, much less running the mob. The mob fell apart, and he had no role in it anymore after he got out of prison because he was just not capable of doing anything. He was pretty much gone at that point.
So maybe the movie depicting him as someone who has lost control of his faculties, whether or not it was a big fake that he was putting on or something that was real, it sounds like it may have been real, according to what you're saying.
Oh, he definitely suffered from dementia in the last years of his life. I don't think he was faking it, and that may be just an artistic device that the screenwriters used to try to create some drama out of those last years, because there wasn't much drama in Capone's life once he got out of prison.
Yeah. So what are the facts and fallacies about Capone? Was he as ruthless and bloodletting as we read and see in the movies?
Oh, he was absolutely ruthless and used violence to control the booze business in Chicago. He didn't do it himself. He very rarely used a gun himself. And maybe early in his career, there were a couple murders that he was connected to. But once he became the power in Chicago, he delegated all of that, and he was very smart about keeping his hands clean. The biggest myth about him, I think, number one thing people think about Al Capone is, Valentine's Day Massacre. He killed all those guys in the garage on Clark Street. But that was not Capone. That's a huge misunderstanding and a myth. And it's, because police couldn't solve the crime, they just kind of assumed Capone must have had something to do with it. And then the TV shows and the movies took off from there, and they made it Capone's worst crime. But I found very compelling evidence that he had nothing whatsoever to do with it.
Didn't order it, didn't suggest it, didn't pay somebody to do it.
Didn't order it.
Absolutely nothing to do with it. Did not want it to happen.
Didn't even want it to happen because he was under investigation by the feds at that point. He knew they were trying to put him away. He had no problems with Moran and Moran's gang at that point. They were not squabbling over turf. This was definitely something that brought down more pressure on him, and he did not want it.
How is it that the police, and I feel like I want to talk gangster talk when I'm talking about this. How is it that the coppers were never able to get Capone? How were they never able to get him on anything except a tax evasion, which is what ultimately put him in jail?
Listen, it's because he bought off the cops.
Yeah, the screws couldn't get him, Messi.
He bought off the cops. He bought off the courts. He bought off all the politicians, so he couldn't get arrested in Chicago if he tried. And he was also smart about, you know, he didn't deliver the booze himself, so you couldn't catch him breaking the prohibition laws. He didn't shoot anybody, so it was very difficult to connect him to any murders. And the feds were frustrated. They knew he was flaunting it. He was walking around telling everybody, "Sure, I do the booze business because people want to drink," and they couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't stop him. So they finally just said, "Well, let's get him off the streets. And if income tax evasion is the best we can do, at least we shut him down."
Yeah.
And that was the plan. It was a modest plan, but it worked.
Yeah. Was it really the life's work of Elliot Ness to capture him?
And that's another one of the great myths. Ness had nothing to do with Capone's conviction, and he was really just sort of a fly in Capone's ointment. He bothered Capone a little bit, but he never put together a case that was good enough to convict. So Elliot Ness really became this legend even after Ness died. It was only after his ghostwriter created this fabulous story about Elliot Ness that his legend began to grow. So yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions. That's why you should encourage your listeners to read books as well as watch the movies.
Right. Not good for business for me, but yes, that's probably a very good.
You can share your attention.
We can share the attention span. Exactly. But, well, because we probably learned the myth about Elliot Ness and Capone from the old television show, which made it seem like that's all Ness wanted to do was get Capone.
Yeah, and this is what happens so often with American history. You know, TV or movies tells a story, and it becomes the truth. It becomes all that we know about these characters. And the beauty of Capone's story is that it's complicated. He was a decent guy, and to his friends and family, they liked him, and he had this incredible opportunity to get rich at a time when selling beer didn't seem like such a terrible crime, and he took advantage of it, and he committed some terrible crimes along the way, but you have to embrace the complexity of that story to understand how it even happened.
Right. About how many people do you think you interviewed when you were putting your book together, Get Capone, The Secret Plot That Captured America's Most Wanted Gangster?
Well, I interviewed at least a couple hundred people, not many that knew Capone, but certainly some people who knew the business, knew his people who were in his outfit. Some of his relatives were around. Some of them were kids who remembered him vaguely. But he had a big presence in Chicago, so there were a lot of people who had stories. And, the thing about Capone stories in Chicago is that most of them turn out to be bull. Everybody says that, their grandpa drove for Capone, or they had a speakeasy in the basement, and Capone used to come there. And it's very hard to separate those stories, the fake ones from the real ones.
All right, let's see if you can help us with this one then, from Paula, who's on the phone line, 312-981-7200. I don't know if you know anything, Jonathan, about Al Capone's dental hygiene, but Paula says that her father-in-law was Capone's dentist. Paula, is that right?
Yes, that's right. That's true. Dean, thank you for all your broadcasting. It's very uplifting to hear you.
Thank you.
Yes, my father-in-law was Capone's dentist in Chicago Heights.
So what can you tell us? How was his dental? Were his molars? How were Capone's molars?
What I learned through my 50-some years of marriage from this story is that when Capone and his boys came into the dental office, he was always next.
Never waiting.
Had to have an appointment.
No waiting.
Was always next. He would come in with his boys. And when he sat in the chair, my father-in-law used to brief him as to what he's going to do. I'm going to do this, that, and it might hurt. And because his boys were standing all around with guns drawn.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
So that's the story in a nutshell. And he was his famous or infamous patient at the time.
Did your father-in-law?
When he paid his bill. Yeah. He would just pull out a wad of bills, a wad of money, and just peel them off and just decide how much he's going to pay and threw them on the desk and then left, I guess.
I guess it depended on how much it hurt. Then he would decide.
Well, I'm sure the dentist tried to make it hurt as little as possible.
Yes.
Because his life was on the line.
And I imagine there weren't very many painkillers back then either. So, Jonathan, what do you make of this?
Well, I love stories like that, and I have to say that they often turn out to be true in Chicago, because Capone was a very public guy. He didn't hide. He didn't feel the need to. He was well protected, and he mingled with people. He was a very social person. He went to ball games. You know, there are pictures of him at Wrigley and Comiskey, and even at Northwestern football games. He wore a purple suit once to go to a Northwestern football game.
Wow.
He wore these gaudy suits, with these with big chunks of jewelry, because he wanted to be noticed. And I think he wanted to be seen as a legit businessman, and that meant he didn't have to hide.
How about that?
That's an amazing history story. And one addition, Capone had a very fancy house in Florida, I was told, and they offered to sell it to my father-in-law, but he turned it down.
Wow, how about that?
At the time.
You could have been living in a house that had
gold fixtures, gold trim,
You're right.
Affluent. But anyway, that's our family story that we pass on, and I always tell it to the dentist that I meet.
That's fantastic.
They're always amazed that he would, well, I guess my father-in-law didn't have a choice. He had to keep him as a patient if he wanted to live.
Exactly.
Would come in, and that's the procedure that he did.
I love that story. Thank you for sharing that, Paul. I appreciate that. Are there Capone places now, Jonathan, that people, could go visit? I know, where the St. Valentine's, now that we know that the St. Valentine's Day Massacre wasn't even associated with Capone, why even bother? The buildings, the garage isn't even there anymore. But are there Capone places that people could check out now?
There are very few, and the city has really done its best to hide them. Mayor Daley, in particular, was horrified at the idea that tourists would come and look for Capone stuff, and he downplayed it tremendously, which is a shame, I think, because some of those sites were historical. The address where the Valentine's Day Massacre occurred is an empty lot now. His house, though, on South Prairie, the house that he bought for his mom, where he lived with his mother and his brother and his wife and his son, is still there and looks exactly the same. That's on, I think it's the 7400 block of South Prairie.
Wow.
There are very few other places. The hotels where he hung out are gone.
Right.
The Green Mill is a place that he may have dropped by, and the Green Mill likes to talk about it a lot. And I like to think that you can feel some of Capone's presence there. But there are very few places left where you can really feel Capone's ghost.
Yeah. Well, the book is Get Capone, The Secret Plot That Captured America's Most Wanted Gangster. But Jonathan is the best-selling author of many books, including a book about Muhammad Ali, A Life, The Luckiest Man, The Life and Death of Lou Gehrig, Opening Day, The Story of Jackie Robinson's First Season. Are you working on something now?
Yeah, I am. First of all, I've got a children's book coming out in the fall, and it's set here in Chicago, and I've got a big biography of Martin Luther King Jr. coming in about, maybe a year and a half.
Great. Let's chat. If not before then, let's definitely talk about those when they come out. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.